Hi, Charisse here with a special announcement. You can now enjoy select episodes of Detailed in video form. That's right. Detailed is now available on RCAT's YouTube channel. Now, you may be thinking, I already listened to the podcast. No need to watch it on YouTube. Well, trust me, if you don't want to miss out, even if you're an avid listener of the podcast, the video format is a completely different experience. Not only is it like hanging out with us, but you also get to hear parts of the conversation that were left on the cutting room floor. You can also see the photos, drawings, and video as we discuss the incredible projects that are featured. Come join us on YouTube. Follow the link in our show notes, and let's get into the details. This is an original podcast by RCAT. Try the number one most used website for finding building product information and save time and money. No registration is required with RCAT, so try it today and get ahead on your next project. Visit RCAT.com. That's ARCAT.com.
That hill has an amphitheater in it and a fire pit at the base of the amphitheater. So again, referencing some of those biophilic patterns in fire, as you already mentioned, the comfort of fire, the watching of fire is a very comforting thing. There is a lot of talk about how to manage a fire on a college campus, but they seem to be doing an all right job. And it's, I think, a really, really valuable resource toward them.
This is Detailed, an original podcast by RCAT. I am your host, Charisse Lakeside, senior specification writer at RDH Building Science and fondly known as the CSI Kraken. We will speak with professionals who share their insights into the most complex, interesting, and odd building conditions and the ingenuity it took to make it work. Join me as I pull back the curtain on the building industry and uncover the lessons learned. You'll gain valuable knowledge to help you better navigate your next project. My guest today is Sam Batchelor, AIA Lead AP, partner at Design Lab Architects in Boston, Massachusetts. Sam leads projects that respond to and sustain the natural environments in which they sit. These undertakings cut across a broad range of typologies, but typically concern buildings for educational, community, and cultural institutions. His recent work includes the new Health and Wellness Center at Quinnipiac University, the transformation of Kevin Roche's Brutalist Fine Arts Bridge at UMass Amherst, and the Worcester Blackstone Visitor Center, which won a 2023 AIA Architecture Award. The project we will be talking about today is Quinnipiac University Health and Wellness Center in Hamden, Connecticut. But before we get started, don't forget to take a look at the project photos and drawings as you listen along. You can click the link in our show notes or visit www.rcat.com/podcast. Situated at the core of Quinnipiac University, the Health and Wellness Center seamlessly merges health, counseling, and recreation under one roof. This building trifecta is a place intended to support overall well-being, catering to the mind, body, and spirit. The genesis of this transformative space was rooted in the recognition of the interconnectedness of various facets of wellness. The university aimed to coherently combine all of these elements in an inviting manner.
All credit to them on that regard. You know, they really, that was an initiative they had before we came on, I think largely driven by their president to combine those. Particularly health and counseling had been really under-resourced prior to that. They didn't have nearly enough space. So it was a huge increase in space and resources for them. But the idea of co-locating them with recreation came from them. I think we were really inspired by it and layered onto it a couple additional things. We layered on the sort of fourth piece of the puzzle, which was the sort of social and educational component, which really tied those three elements together. And that included things like nutrition classes, demonstration kitchen, just a student activities room that was a place for student groups to come and get together and meet, as well as a smoothie bar, again, serving sort of nutritional food, but food, you know, nothing draws college students like food. And so that really made it a place to come and be social, meet other people. You could hang out before your workout. You could meet up with people or do some homework before you had an appointment. And there was a lot of effort being focused on making it a place that people would come naturally as a way to help sort of remove some of the stigma of seeking mental health services, and just a place to kind of cross-pollinate those things. So maybe someone who was coming for recreation would see some mental health offerings and be intrigued. Maybe someone who was coming for health services would see a fitness class they were interested in, and really trying to kind of create that connection between all of those different activities and services that they were offering.
Breaking down barriers and dispelling stigma. The inclusion of counseling and psychiatric services underscores the commitment to supporting both mental and physical health. The program necessitated the integration of diverse spaces to meet these multifaceted objectives.
The building is organized pretty logically. You enter into this main social educational space. That is really the hub that connects all three of these other departments. And there are a number of entries, either from the main campus, from the parking lot, or from an adjacent building. So the building's actually appended to the previous or existing recreation center. So it kind of uses a number of those facilities for dual purpose. But you come into that central space, and that is really kind of the largest open space. Great views to the courtyard that was created as part of this building. That's where the smoothie bar is. That's where the teaching kitchen is. So you might walk by an instructional cooking class. The student activity center is upstairs. There's a main reception desk that allows you to sort of check into the recreation space. The recreation space is card access controlled so that they can kind of count users and also close that portion of the building down at off hours, but still keep the more public-facing pieces open. And the recreation center is two stories on the south end of the building. It has a two-story climbing wall in the center of it with a skylight at the top, so you can actually climb above the roofline of the building and get the sunlight coming in through the skylight up above. And on the north wing, there is the health services on the first floor and the counseling services on the second floor. And the counseling offices in particular are designed like some of those other introspective spaces. They have skylights, they have indirect light, so that the counseling offices themselves feel like these kind of safe, connected spaces where students can go and get services. They're up on the second floor. There's a main stair there that kind of loops around the student activities space and the kitchen space, so that, you know, people come and use the space. It is a prominent space, but it is not super on display. There are multiple reasons to be going up to that second floor, so there's not a sort of stigma with sort of going to the second floor, but it's also, we're not hiding it. We're not sort of making it a secret. So we're really trying to sort of walk that line between making it a comfortable space, but also sort of fighting stigma.
The building's L-shaped design encloses an interior courtyard, a tranquil haven that beckons visitors to unwind and rejuvenate.
As I mentioned, the building is appended to in the existing recreation building. And that building was sort of roughly L-shaped. And our new building is also L-shaped. And so the two L's interconnected to create this courtyard in the center. And so that was one of the main kind of planning principles in terms of the shape and massing of the building, was creating a central courtyard that was a connection to outdoor space. And that took a little bit of convincing because, you know, we are in New England. It is pretty cold in the winter and school is not generally in session in the summer. And so there was some resistance to the idea of, well, like, would a courtyard be a really highly utilized space? And first of all, it has proven to be that it is used even in not so great weather, particularly because it provides some level of protection still. It reduces the wind. It creates, it's actually much quieter in there, you know, even though it's open air, that it really does a lot to buffer a lot of the surrounding noise. But also it also makes the rest of the building really beautiful and connected to nature, even when it's full of a foot of snow and nobody goes out there, because you have that direct connection to an outdoor space that is still relatively pristine. You know, the snow is relatively untouched. The trees are moving gently. You're not seeing cars whizzing by or students hanging out and arguing or any of that stuff. It's a very kind of calm, contemplative influence on the building around it. That's one of the main principles of biophilia, is that connection is important, and you're trying to provide both connection from and protection from the environment, right? There's a little bit of a tension there, but it is really nice to sit in a space and listen to and watch the rain pound against the glass, right? Like, it's really wonderful to be in a warm, cozy space when it's absolutely garbage outside. And it's so much better to be in that warm, cozy space and be aware of the outside, even if it is garbage, than it is to be in a windowless room with no clue of what's happening outside.
Embracing the principles of biophilic design, Design Lab architects infused the building with elements that doubled down on the healing power of nature.
The other thing that we brought to the project, which I'm particularly proud of, is the integration of the biophilic design into the kind of core concept. You know, the campus is a very kind of traditionally laid out, manicured New England campus with a central quad and, you know, buildings surrounding it. But it is nestled within a really beautiful Connecticut rural landscape. And in fact, it's right across the street from Sleeping Giant State Park, which is a beautiful kind of nature preserve state park named after the profile of the hills in the park. If you look at it from a distance, it looks like a giant sleeping on their back. But integrating the natural landscape into the building using, you know, natural materials and natural principles was something we really wanted to do and really advocated for because of the connection between natural spaces and wellness, and really using the building as a place to connect to natural spaces and natural phenomenon, both sort of emotionally while you're in the building, but also as a launch pad to actually get people out of the building, either into the courtyard that we created or the adjacent landscape or farther afield into Sleeping Giant or any other nearby really beautiful Connecticut trails and wood spaces.
Locally sourced and minimally processed materials such as spruce pine fir for the structure and granite for the base, not only contribute to sustainability, but also add a tactile richness to the building.
So a kind of long list of things to try to hit biophilic design at a number of levels. You know, first and foremost, it is largely a timber structure. So they're, you know, glue lamp beams in many parts of the building and CLT throughout, which is all exposed. So there's a lot of wood used structurally and visibly, which obviously has sustainable benefits as well from a carbon standpoint. We also used a lot of wood in finish materials. So there's a lot of plywood panels that are in a character oak. We actually worked really hard to source plywood that was a little bit kind of knotty and burly so that it had a real natural feel. We, you know, contractors and woodworkers are always trying to find the kind of clearest, straightest grain. And we really had to push back and say, no, we want something rougher. We want something that feels raw, feels natural. So we use that quite a bit particularly in a number of the key spaces. We have these spaces for kind of introspection. So the connection to the landscape is both direct in terms of having really beautiful broad views of Sleeping Giant, of the courtyard, of the campus, but also spaces with indirect connection to nature. So these introspective spaces usually either have a skylight or a balcony with that is kind of offset from the space so that you have the presence of daylight, but in a reflected sense. You're not looking out at people or out at the landscape. You're getting the feeling of the sun moving across the space, or you're looking at the sky, but they're connected to nature in a more kind of emotional way. We also used a number of green walls, live living green walls in the building, so that there is, you know, living plant material that you're walking by that you can touch. We introduced stone to the building as a material, both inside and out, which was new to campus. It's a almost entirely brick campus, but the building itself is a kind of combination of brick and stone, which was a real direct connection to Sleeping Giant. Sleeping Giant has these big, beautiful rocky outcroppings, which are a kind of brownish hue from the oxidation of the iron in the stone. And so we sourced local Connecticut stone that would create that same kind of brownish oxidized color over time. So there were a lot of material choices like that, but in addition, a lot of these sort of experiential choices. We talk a lot about the idea of prospect and refuge, which talks a lot about those kind of different types of views, spaces to sort of like take in the whole space and feel like you're sort of in command of it, but also spaces where you can feel protected. You can kind of sit in a corner and feel safe and warm and contained and very comfortable.
The patterns and textures within are harmoniously complemented by captivating views of the natural world, merging the interior and the exterior.
The courtyard itself has a kind of large, kind of rocky assemblage with a number of pretty mature trees in it, which will, of course, only grow and gain stature, because it was really important to us that courtyard had a real natural feel. It wasn't just paved, right? It had real plant life. It had sizable plant life. It had larger stone elements, again, referencing the stone from Sleeping Giant and the larger Connecticut landscape. We worked with Stimson Studio Landscape Architects who designed that space and did an amazing job. And also the space outside the building, outside the courtyard, was really transformed. The building was actually built on a site that had some tennis courts on it before. So we had to kind of reconstruct the landscape outside it. The tennis courts were moved to the more kind of athletic portion of campus. So we created a whole new landscape outside the building that really kind of mitigated the transition from the more formal campus to the more natural campus. So it is not quite as formal as the rest of the campus, but it does still have some lawn elements, and then it transitions to sort of a hill or berm that buffers it from some of the athletic fields on the other side. That hill has an amphitheater in it and a fire pit at the base of the amphitheater. So again, referencing some of those biophilic patterns in fire, the as you already mentioned, the comfort of fire, the watching of fire is a very comforting thing. There is a lot of talk about how to manage a fire on a college campus, but they seem to be doing an all right job, and it's, I think, a really, really valuable resource toward them.
A key feature of the building is a substantial timber curtain wall constructed with glulam beams. This not only strengthens and flows with the timber structure, but also transforms the space into an open, warm environment.
As I mentioned, there is a lot of brick on campus, so the building has a good bit of brick. But we also integrated stone, both as a base and on other elements. And the main kind of second floor portion of that primary social education space is actually wrapped in a timber curtain wall. So that kind of large timber curtain wall bar sits on a stone base. So the stone kind of lifts up to support that. It bridges across, and you have this sort of very transparent, very natural material main element at the space. The very end of it is the kind of largest fitness studio that they use for dance rehearsals and other larger fitness classes, with a sort of sweeping view across campus of the library. But so the sort of primary element of the building is this large timber curtain wall bar sitting on this stone base. instead of aluminum extrusions, they use glulam beams as the support structure for the curtain wall. We still used aluminum caps on the outside just because the durability of the wood was something that was a concern. You can get them with solid wood caps as well. We looked into that, but ultimately there were just too many concerns about the durability and the maintenance of them. I can't speak to whether they were true or not, but there was certainly some anxiety around that. But it's a really beautiful effect, particularly from the inside, because we have the timber structure and the timber curtain wall, and they kind of just meld into sort of a seamless field of wood verticals. And also, obviously, the carbon benefits are huge. Aluminum is quite carbon intensive, and the timber has a lot of benefits in that regard.
A combination of character oak cladding, a climbing wall, an intertwined staircase, and green walls help frame and define the interior.
The inside is really punctuated by a series of these objects, and these objects are clad in the character oak. It's a red oak, so it actually is because both the character and the color, it stands out as different from the structural wood, which is a pine, a sort of lighter yellower hue. And so those objects are the kind of core program elements. So the climbing wall is one of them. And we had to work really hard to get the climbing wall clad in the same red oak. I'm sure you can appreciate as a spike writer, getting the millwork spec to match the climbing wall spec was a little bit of a challenge. But we also then carved a stair out of the back of it. So it really reads like an object. So the climbing wall is on the front, there's a stair through the center, and then some other program elements on the backside. So it feels spatial. The two of the three main fitness studios are also clad in this character oak. They have those sort of indirect sunlight characteristics that make them feel more sort of ephemerally connected to the outdoors and nature. The student activities room and teaching kitchen are part of an object. They're stacked one on top of each other. And the counseling offices are part of an object as well. So we have five or six of these objects that really start to define the interior space. They define how the light comes into them. We really, worked hard to control how the light comes into them. They all have green walls on parts of them, so that there's these very sort of natural objects that sit in this otherwise pretty open field of timber and glass. And again, the timber spaces are very sinewy, they're sticks with the light moving through them, and these objects are solid, they're panels, so that they kind of control the light in a very different way.
Are those hard to design? Does the landscape consultant do all of that? Or I've always wondered, what are you doing in the wall to grow something up an entire wall?
They're basically a manufactured system. So we work with a manufacturer who gives us all of the requirements for the lights that have to go on them, the watering system. There's a central watering room that has a tank that pumps water to all of the systems. They're set in a growing medium. They have a little tray at the bottom. But it's all from a particular manufacturer, and the manufacturer provides the maintenance program from it as well. So they're a good bit of work to coordinate just all the requirements, but in terms of making sure you didn't forget something, it's not too much worry because you really are working with a specialist.
Elevating the commitment to sustainability, the Health and Wellness Center proudly boasts LEED Gold certification. The utilization of mass timber not only showcases architectural ingenuity, but also serves as a strategic move to reduce embodied carbon.
The sustainability goals are largely aligned with the experiential goals, right? So it's the locally sourced, minimally processed materials, which offer, real sustainable benefits, but also create a connection to place that is really important for the students to have and to feel. It is, of course, energy efficient. We worked really hard to create a tight envelope, a highly insulative envelope. We have an 80 kilowatt photovoltaic array on the roof. We have, quite a few stormwater management systems in place, including a large rain garden out front, which also really acts as a buffer between the recreation space. So the recreation space gives out onto the main campus and onto the amphitheater. But we really wanted to avoid the feeling of being kind of in a fishbowl or on display. So there's a rain garden adjacent to the building that serves as a buffer between those spaces. So people who are in there working out are immediately looking at the rain garden and then onto campus beyond, and vice versa from campus. You're sort of faced with the rain garden, and then you see folks exercising in the distance. You're not face to face with people on a treadmill as you walk by.
Creating a natural environment by sculpting the inside and the outside of the building with wood objects proved to be the biggest challenge.
What was surprisingly hard, but wasn't actually a technical issue, but was the shaping of these wood objects. You know, figuring out how to make them feel natural and not, you know, just square boxes, but also not sort of over fetishized and too many jigs and jogs, to make them really feel like natural formations we went through round and round and round of those. Some were super bumpy, some were curved, some were angled, some were this. So just the number of iterations on those, just to try to get them to a place where they felt like they were sort of the right amount of sculpted, was surprisingly challenging.
Well, it sounds like, at least, you know, I don't know about all the different objects, but like you mentioned earlier when we were chatting with the rock climbing wall, that you made it useful as well with a stair going through it. Did I understand that right? So it's not just this thing taking up a certain amount of space. I mean, it's useful as a rock climbing wall, but it's useful as something else as well. Were you able to incorporate that into all of the objects, make them, you know, so they're part of the living life in this building, or was that only possible with some of them?
That's true for almost all of them, if not all of them. I think, you know, and perhaps what made it hard is we were sculpting both the inside and the outside. And so there was, you know, in a lot of cases, some pretty solid thickness to the kind of interstitial space between the inside and the outside, which again became a design element. When we cut holes in it, you could kind of see the thickness to it. But you had to solve the problem from both sides. You had to sort of solve it from the outside. How did it look as you were circulating around it in the building? And how did it look and feel when you were inside the room?
Construction wasn't just about creating a structure. It was about bringing Sam's team and the contractor together to craft an environment that positively influences mental and physical wellness. The architecture is the conduit for well-being.
We were really lucky. We worked with a great contractor and a number of like really, really talented craftspeople, particularly the millworker who had to fabricate all of these, you know, non-rectilinear panels and fit them together like a puzzle. The foreman would joke that he would basically open one of those rooms and let the millworkers in the morning and then lock the doors and leave them alone and come back at the end of the day and everything would be perfectly crisp and laid out, and just had to sort of give them their space and let them work their magic. So I think, you know, having that construction team that is really integrated, really on the same page, really on board. You know, we were lucky that it was a company, FIP Construction, that had done a lot of work on campus and had a really good relationship with the facilities department there, so that everyone really trusted each other. Nobody was sort of jockeying for power or sort of who was, you know, going to start pointing fingers. Everyone just was really super solutions oriented. So that was really nice. In terms of, you know, lessons learned, I think the thing that I had heard and proved to be very true about mass timber construction was that the amount of work up front in the shop drawing phase was huge, and a lot of coordination and a lot of shop drawing meetings and revisions and coordination that really took a lot of time, but really helped. The actual installation and erection was super quick. I mean, this was the contractor's first mass timber job as well, and they commented about how quick it was and how once they were in, you immediately had the walking surface, and the craftspeople were up there working immediately. You weren't welding shear studs and pouring concrete and waiting for it to cure and all that stuff when you're using concrete on metal decks. So it was, you know, they craned it in and they were working on it the next day.
Given the vast diversity of all of these spaces, I was curious if Sam had an aspect of the project that he gravitated toward the most.
I would probably say the student activities room on the second floor above the teaching kitchen, because it kind of, it has all of the elements, you know, it's almost like a little treehouse. You kind of like come up the stairs and loop around and go into it. It has a skylight in it. So you get these sort of beautiful views, captured views of the skies, almost like a James Turrell sky space kind of thing. And then it also has like a very kind of hyper-focused window out of the room across the stair into the courtyard. So you have views to the outside, you have views to the sky, you still feel very enclosed. It has another little window where you can see down kind of onto the lobby. I think it has that, it really perfectly encapsulates that idea of prospect and refuge. You feel very cozy, you feel very safe, but you also like have these direct connections to the outside. And I think it encapsulates a lot of the ideas that we were trying to accomplish in the building. And then appear in a lot of other places as well, but they're kind of all consolidated in that one spot.
The amalgamation of health, counseling, and recreation, coupled with innovative programs in social and nutritional education, forms the foundation of a comprehensive approach to this project. Sam illuminates the synergies between the universities and the architectural design, showcasing why they collaborate effectively to achieve these objectives.
I think, you know, universities have a real advantage because they are, on the one hand, very nimble. You know, the decision-making process at a university is much faster than, say, a municipal agency, right? A town or a state. But they have often the resources of a municipality, right? You know, they have the resources to make big, bold moves and the decision-making structure to make those happen. And so I think that's why we're seeing them at the forefront of some of these innovations. You know, I think they particularly are leading the charge on decarbonization. A lot of universities have their own power plants and own infrastructure, much like a small town. And a lot of them are making wholesale switches to decarbonize their grid and their systems, which I think we'll probably see translating to municipal levels eventually. But they're kind of right-sized and right-resourced to be able to make those moves quickly. And so I think that's why we see it happening in universities first.
In the wake of its inauguration, the center has become a bustling hub of activity, with weekly student visits soaring from 3,500 to an impressive 12,000. I was curious to know Sam's thoughts on whether this holistic strategy, paired with a place designed for it, is helping to destigmatize behavioral health treatment.
So my optimistic answer is yes. You know, I think universities certainly are taking a more whole student view of the education experience. And we joked sometimes that a lot of the offerings in this building were classes in adulting, you know, how to go exist in the real world, and that universities more and more are taking on this role of, like, you know, general life educator and coach, as opposed to just here are the classes and things you need to know. And so I think that on the one hand, that's a very good thing. That's, you know, really helping students and young adults become citizens of the world is a very good and healthy thing. And especially as an architect who works in that industry and makes a living creating these spaces, that's very good. On the other hand, as a parent of three kids who are going to college in the next, 6 to 8 years, I wonder about the financial sustainability of that. You know, it is a bit of an arms race, and people, you know, colleges are building more and more non-educational facilities and providing more and more non-educational offerings, and college is really becoming a sort of coming of age experience as much as it is an educational experience. And I do worry that it then makes it unattainable to some, right? It puts it out of reach of some, and it creates or contributes to the sort of bifurcated society we have. And there are, you know, there's obviously huge financial aid programs, and colleges are doing a lot to try to ensure that that doesn't happen. But it is something I worry about as my kids are entering that age.
I really enjoyed this conversation with Sam. I hope this episode sparks a new idea, helps you solve a problem that you've been working through, or inspires the mark that you want to leave on this world.
You know, at the simplest level, I hope to make the world a more beautiful and sustainable place. You know, I hope that the buildings that I contribute to will help us figure out how to do a better job of living in harmony with our planet, and that they will help teach others how to do that, that there will be lessons in them that furthers that kind of knowledge and experiential learning associated with it. And that, you know, I think I really try to focus on taking care of the people in these processes. And that means everyone from the clients and users to other members of the design team to the contractors and builders who work on it. Because I really believe that if you keep your focus on that, if you focus on taking care of the people, that the architecture will take care of itself.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and want to learn more, visit rcat.com/podcast to see photos, details, and more related project and product information that we discussed today. While you're there, take a look around rcat.com. For over 30 years, RCAT has been the resource for AEC professionals to find the right products for their project. Try RCAT and see how their tools can save you time and money and help you get ahead on your next project. Visit rcat.com. That's ARCAT.com. If you enjoyed the show, you can support us by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, and sharing this with your friends. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back to share more stories and lessons learned to help you navigate your next project.